It's at 6:30 p.m. here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned for Off the Hook coming up, and it's now 7 p.m. Stay tuned.
El teléfono que usted ha marcado cambió de número. Codetel.
The number you dialed has been changed. Codetel.
If you'd like to make a call, please hang up and try again. If you need help, stay on the line and a hacker will assist you shortly.
Very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes, indeed.
Out in Skype land, we have Gila.
Good evening.
We have Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
And we have Alex.
Good evening.
And what part of the world are you in this week, Alex?
Well, I am in a different country, as I promised, from last week. I am in the mountains of Croatia today. So hello from Croatia.
Wow. Okay, well, that's a good choice, and hope it's scenic enough for you there, because when I was there, it was very scenic.
Oh, it's absolutely beautiful here. I'm in the Dalmatian coast. I'm in the island of Brač. And it's absolutely gorgeous. There's also a massive thunder and lightning storm going on behind me. So that'll add to the ambiance.
Yeah, step outside so we can get the full benefit of that. We'd like to hear that.
Yeah.
And
let's see if we can hear it. I don't know. I can't make it thunder.
Uh-huh.
But maybe we'll have a coincidence that when I'm talking, it'll start thundering.
There is nothing like Croatian thunder. Let that be said.
Yeah, there really is. Right. Yeah. And you're so close to it up here, so it's an amazing place.
Mm-hmm. Well, we are here for the full hour this week. Next week is our special BAI Buddy show, and what that means is we're going to be calling on our listeners to become BAI Buddies, and what that means is that you pledge a certain amount every month, a small amount, you know, like $10, $15, and it adds up over a year and helps us pay the bills. We're going to be asking many people to become BAI buddies next week. Of course, you can become a BAI buddy right now if you want, but next week is you know, we're making it official, and we want it to be a big response. So please spread the word. Let people know, and you'll become our buddies as well. But you can always pledge to WBAI. Go to the website, WBAI.org. Call 212-209-2950. We have a lot of things to talk about tonight. And, you know, there's something going on north of the border that I don't know if many of us are aware of. Here's a headline that was in the Washington Post a couple of days ago. As fires and floods rage, Facebook and Twitter are missing in action. Yeah, you guys know about this? Basically, Google, Facebook, Twitter, they all are fighting with the Canadian government because the Canadian government wants these massive companies to pay news outlets for linking to articles. Now, Canadian Parliament passed a law that will require technology companies to pay domestic news outlets for linking to their articles, prompting the owners of Facebook and Instagram to say that it would pull news articles from both platforms in the country. And I believe Twitter has started doing the same thing. The law passed on, mid-June is when this actually was passed. It's the latest salvo in a push by governments around the world to force big companies like Google and Facebook to pay for news that they share on their platforms, a campaign the companies have resisted at virtually every turn. Now, with some caveats, the new Canadian law is going to force search engines and social media companies to engage in a bargaining process and binding arbitration, if necessary, for licensing news content for their use. The law is called the Online News Act. It was modeled after a similar one that passed in Australia 2 years ago. It's designed to enhance fairness in the Canadian digital news marketplace and contribute to its sustainability. That's according to an official summary. Exactly when the law takes effect is not entirely clear, but it's definitely getting a reaction, and these companies have simply cut off news access. In other words, if you post a link to a news story, it won't go through. They will not let you do that on their services because they don't want to have to pay however much the Canadian government is insisting they pay in order to do this. I'll just throw it out. What do you guys think about this? Alex?
Well, you know, this is something I think we've talked about this a bit before on this show with respect to, I believe it was Australia a couple of months ago. And I think this is chipping away at the utility of the social media platforms themselves. You know, they don't want to pay for this type of information. They don't want to support these third-party organizations that are, in turn, supporting their own platforms. It seems to me like a real matter of equity here, and it's a game of chicken that the social media platforms are playing with these governments. And I think that ultimately, the governments might cave in, and I think that's what the social media platforms are very much hoping for here, is that saying, well, look, you know, there's been an uproar in our country, and they'll see that these platforms are becoming more powerful than the regional governments that they're opposing. But I think if the governments stand firm, this is something that really can cause social media companies to have to bend the knee to them. Because I do see it as really a matter of fairness that they should have to pay something for the news that they are disseminating on their platforms. It seems to be, akin to a small tax.
Now, is this something that is unprecedented where you expect somebody to pay for a link that is on their site?
Perhaps in a sense, but I think the links are also providing the amplification or the fuel for the sharing of the content itself, and that the link is going to also have some information about the article, not just the link, that there'll be some kind of preview of the information. And if you think about it, that may be enough for somebody to get a taste of what the information is. Nobody really reads through any article in its entirety these days. I mean, maybe you and I do, to prepare for this type of for a show or something like this, but I think a lot of people just skim or look through their social media feeds and get a taste for what the information is without even clicking on those particular links. So I think the preview of the information itself may be sufficient for the governments to state their position.
You know, Alex, I was having an issue with this because I was all kinds of alarm bells were going off in my head expecting anyone to pay just to link someplace just seemed like something I should be against. But what you just said was the preview. Yeah. You know, if I was to take a picture of a news story and put it on a website and then put all kinds of other pictures of front pages of newspapers, yeah, it's only a preview, but I'm still using their content for my benefit. And that is exactly what Facebook and Twitter do, because when you post those links, you see an image with the headline, and you're getting the information without ever leaving Twitter, without ever leaving Facebook. I think it's about that more than it's about transferring your connection, going over to the New York Times or the Washington Post or whatever, and reading the story over there. Of course, they want you to do that. They want you to go to their site. But like you said, many people just stay on the platform, on Facebook, on Twitter, and never really read the entire article, if they even click on it at all. But they're getting the story, they're getting the headline, they're getting the information, and the news outlets are getting nothing. And Facebook and Twitter are making a ton of money. Rob?
I think this is bananas that anyone would think that they're entitled to some kind of payment for another site linking to them. All of us here, I think, on this program, we all have experience putting content online, and you know, when you publish stuff online for people to see, links to what you're doing are good. That's what brings in the eyeballs to what you're doing. That's what brings people in and you know, gets them a look at your product. As far as this preview for the link, that's something that Twitter and Facebook have control over. One example is Instagram. Twitter has had a beef with Instagram for ages, and for that reason, when you post a link to a photo on Instagram to your Twitter, that preview isn't generated. It's just the link. But people can click the link, go over to Instagram, and see the thing. So it's about that functionality, and Twitter and Facebook could easily just stop generating those previews. And I think that might bring it into compliance with whatever. But I think this is also potentially very, very dangerous, because if people stop linking to, say, established news sites, then the news that's going to get posted, or the, quote, news that's going to get posted to social media and make the rounds, is going to be any old garbage from, like, random sites around the web that may or may not have any dependability whatsoever. But if you can post it to your Facebook instead of CNN or what have you, then those links are the ones that are going to get around. And that's potentially just going to be ground zero for all kinds of misinformation and crap.
Yeah, but, you know, I think that might actually be a positive, because if you're not confusing mainstream news or sources that are legitimate sources with all kinds of just wacky sites that people come up with, if you only have the wacky sites, and people won't trust Facebook or Twitter for being a source of news or a clearinghouse. You know, we've seen on Canadian TV, because this is a big deal up in Canada, we see pleas for viewers to download apps for specific newspapers or media outlets so that they can get the news directly from those sources, which is the way it should be. You know, they should be going to these sources and reading the paper themselves and not relying on somebody who might be manipulating it in some way on one of these social media sites. But I do think that maybe what we're talking about right now could solve the problem if they don't make those previews. If they simply have a link, and if somebody wants the story, they have to click on the link, because all they're going to see is a link otherwise. And maybe that will satisfy the governments that are insisting on payment for this. Yes, Alex.
Yeah, I think we're onto something here, and I think the unintentional but foreseeable consequence of this particular type of law is exactly what you had mentioned, Emmanuel, which is that, you know, perhaps users now will realize that social media platforms are not the right place to get their news. If this game of chicken continues and news is something that becomes forbidden on these social media sites, well, then we'll stop getting our news from social media sites, and that's probably a really damn good thing, because that will prevent us from being manipulated by disinformation, by misinformation, by troll farms like we saw in 2016 with the Internet Research Agency and by things like, you know, generative artificial intelligence that's going to be producing massive amounts of disinformation ahead of the next election cycle. That's sure to happen as well. And that's going to be amplified and propelled, especially on these social media platforms. So if we train ourselves away from the idea that Facebook and Twitter or X, whatever the hell you want to call it, is where we should be scrolling through and getting updates on what's happening in the world, that's probably not a bad thing if you just go to, if you use the CNN app or the New York Post app or the Financial Times app in order to get your news. I see that being as a very much a good thing, and it prevents us from being manipulated by other channels, even things like domain names that might look like the New York Times or the Financial Times, mm-hmm. Or you know what we saw in 2016 as well was the creation of wholesale bogus media organizations that looked legitimate and had legitimate names, but were just completely made up. So I think getting ourselves away from the idea that social media platforms are where we should be ingesting our news is a really good thing because it's not what they were designed for. Social media platforms, and we keep saying this on the show too, we're using them for purposes for which they were not designed. They were not designed to ingest news. They were not designed for things like foreign relations between nuclear powers, like we saw during the Trump administration with North Korea. So let's use social media platforms for what they were originally designed to do, which is to connect with friends, supposedly, and create communities. Let's wean ourselves off of them. I think this could end up being a great thing.
Go ahead, Rob.
And excuse me. And we've seen sort of this era of social media and the importance of news on it. News spreading via social media when the normal channels weren't available has fueled social change, has fueled upheaval, has fueled all sorts of positive things around the world. And to say social media isn't intended to spread news, I mean, when you go to Twitter, the box where you type your tweet into, it still says, "What is happening?" question mark.
And exclamation point. They added an exclamation
point. Yeah. Wow, what is happening in Terabang? But still, you post on there what's happening. And if what's happening, like, where's the line between what's happening and news? This is a very interesting fuzzy place.
But you can talk about the news, but it should be in your words. If we're just going to be posting previews from other sites, you know, those other sites should be involved somehow. You know, otherwise, what is Twitter actually doing? They're just a clearinghouse of one sort or another, but without any of the responsibility.
Yes, but, I mean, if we're talking about freelance journalists, for example, if you're a freelance journalist, are you going to say, I can no longer share what I have written? Or I remember when we talked about this a few months ago, the thing that popped into my head was, can you share, like, an obituary that was in the newspaper about a family member? Is that prohibited as well?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, where's the line going to be? And the question is, you know, if we're talking about people who are able to, you know, can watch situations happening in real time on social media, probably not as much on Twitter anymore. I will always call it Twitter. But, you know, what we're watching in real time versus where the links are, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, basically run into the issue of paywalls. If you click on a link, it might ask you to pay to read the news story, you know, because that's how newspapers and media outlets think that they will be able to survive by charging people. Whether or not that works or not, it's, you know, it's different for everybody, I suppose. But, you know, Google News, if you click on stories, most of them will take you to paywalls now. But Google's not paying anything. They have all the news right there on a page. You can go to that page and get an idea of what's happening without picking up a newspaper. And maybe you won't pick up a newspaper because you're reading through all the headlines on Google News, and they're getting your eyes on their page, but all the sources of that news aren't getting anything.
There's this success, I think, in part, and there's like competing business models, but I think there is some success in that they're able to ask for this because the paywalls themselves have become ubiquitous, and independent news and publishers and different groups, consortiums of interests, whatever they're doing, like they're able to do and charge for their blog or whatever it is without sort of an intermediary. So they're empowered in some sense, and that should be good for more of the small publishers and local publishers that have struggled. And I think maybe the competition here is part of that success. But the other thing I'm hearing, and I think we might be missing, is that they're benefiting a little bit from the aggregation that a Google News might be doing, because every single one of those opportunities is a chance for someone to click through and be prompted, or maybe they get a free visit, but that process allows them to be asked yet again, and maybe at some point they'll say, I like this news source. And I think they bet on that to a degree. So they are benefiting a little bit mm-hmm. in having those previews. So there may be a little bit of a disinterest, but there's a lot of, I think, competing things going on or evolving in this story at all. And lastly, I think places like Twitter that are more on demand, or like you're saying, a real-time reporting tool, or at least it had been used that way, and mm-hmm. a lot of other different video or other applications have the same kind of sharing technology. But it's more of a place where ideas are kind of being moved around, and maybe news is referenced, but I don't really think either Google News or like a social media app really belong as authoritative news sources. I don't think they can really point to any kind of editor or anything. A lot of them are just mostly promoting or proud of their algorithms and how it's just basically automated.
Yeah, it's all robots.
And it's certain things surface as they do, and they try their best, but GE News is hard, and, you know.
The thing to keep in mind here is that these companies are making a ton of money off of your actions. Whenever you go to their sites, you're being fed their ads. And I think that's where a lot of the hostility is coming from, is that they're benefiting so much and there are so many others who aren't getting anything out of it, even though their content is being used. I don't think it's the same as if one of us had a website and we linked to a news story, it would be completely different. But when you see a company that is, you know, making so much money, benefiting so much, and then the reaction, rather than have a dialogue about this, is to simply just cut off and give a big middle finger to everybody. In fact, you know, there's a headline on Reuters, Canada demands that Meta, the parent company of Facebook, lift news ban to allow wildfire info sharing. You know, they have wildfires up there. They can't post news stories. They can't post links to news stories because Facebook is blocking them. Instagram is blocking them. Instead of simply saying, look, this is something we're going to argue about, and we're going to appeal this, but we're not going to inconvenience our visitors or the people who use our service, and we're not going to do something that could result in people not getting vital information. That is the way they act. That is how they respond to somebody daring to question them. They simply cut everybody off, and in Canada, you can't link to a story about wildfires that might be encroaching on your neighborhood. So I think that kind of says where they're coming from. Go ahead, Rob.
And there is an accessibility issue at play because historically one of the best ways around paywalls, if you were confronted with a news article about something, you saw a headline that was interesting, you click on it, and you're presented with a paywall. One thing to do would be to just go to Google News, type in that headline, and see what other publications are saying about it, some of them with more accessible business models. And failing that, you would go to social media and put that in the search box and see what people are saying about that thing. And so... For news stories to just not get out there in the traditional form, this is going to be a big shift if it goes through. It's going to be really interesting to see how people reassess their dependence on this sort of thing as a news source.
Yeah. And, you know, every time you do that, every time you enter it into their site or go searching, they're making money off that. You're getting fed ads. Your eyeballs are valuable.
Yeah, there's like behavior and other kinds of tracking, mm-hmm. and they're selling that data about you. And that is, again, I think I was alluding to it as part of like the competing business models, because a newspaper that, you know, just released their app or wants to get some digital subscribers is not really doing the same kind of or same level of advertising to you.
Alex, did you have something else on this?
Yeah, I want to go back to the point that you originally made, Emmanuel, which is that one of the points originally made, which is that social media companies are making massive amounts of money off of this content and generating data based on user behavior on their platform. So the more they keep users on their platforms looking at these particular headlines, the link previews, et cetera, the more money they're making. It's really more like a matter of equity to me than anything else, that they're going to be sharing some of those profits with the companies that have actually created the content that are keeping the users on that platform. And their failure to do so is what's causing these countries to enact these national laws, legislation, to force them to do that. But from the perspective of the Facebooks, the X's, the Twitters, the Threads, whatever the hell we have out there now, a contrary viewpoint is that, well, maybe from their perspective, it would be right to oppose all of this right now, because it's such a compliance pain in the butt to try to deal with this with regard to one law from Canada, another law from Australia, another law from, let's say, Croatia, another law from the United Kingdom. You know, and I'm not saying this just because of where I am in the world right now, but it's going to create this balkanization of the Internet, where certain information is available in certain places and certain bubbles, and certain data is not going to be available in other places. It's going to create, as you noted before, public safety issues with regard to things like wildfires spreading in Canada or any other kind of public safety disaster anywhere else in the world if that can't be spread because of these social media policies. But I think the social media companies can get around this particular issue, arguing against myself, against the counterpoint that I just made, by coming to the table and perhaps creating their own type of policy whereby they engage in some form of limited profit sharing based on the links that are posted on their networks, such that they don't have to have their hand forced to share some of these profits by national legislation coming from all these different countries, but by doing it themselves, by being fair, by being equitable. I think that's ultimately what we're talking about here, is people that are generating the news need to be able to profit from from their own labor.
That's exactly it, because you have these companies that are booming, that are doing so well, making money hand over fist, and then you have the journalism outlets that are struggling, that are failing, that are closing down. Okay, the two of those can work with each other, and one can help the other. In fact, they can both help each other. So the very fact that one company is doing great while another company is failing and they're working together, it seems like there should be some symbiotic relationship there. And the reason all of this is coming to a head now is because the tech companies have done nothing to make that happen, and we're seeing the results of that. Kyle, did you have something?
Yeah, I just think there's a little bit of reluctance. So, I mean, they're disinterested, I think, in cooperating in any way with the news sources, especially because of the very kind of institutions that might, you know, share things about their companies and talk about some of the impacts of their products and stuff. But what I was going to point to, I think Alex brought up, regarding public safety, like, that's particularly galling to me, because you know when, like, the ad campaigns come out in the Super Bowl or whatever, they're going to do this, like, feel good, we're doing all this good for, you know, emergency response and helping in the effort and all of that for disaster relief, and all of that with this being sort of the actual way they operate in business and when it is actually impacting people's lives directly, because information is key in moments like this, especially when there's a disaster or something, a calamitous going on. And to enact these policies in places most affected at a time like this, it's just, it's gross. Now, TikTok's already doing it, like, oh, look at all the good we do for people.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
You know, what I found ironic, speaking of TikTok, all the TikTok ads during the Republican debate last week, they spend all this time making us fear TikTok and China and all that, and then they have TikTok ads on Fox.
Counter-programming.
Yeah, that was just weird.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. Speaking of tracking, a few people sent us this article that ran in a publication called, or an online publication called 404media.co. I tracked an NYC subway rider's movements with an MTA quote-unquote feature. I'm just going to read the opening bit of this. In the mid-afternoon one Saturday earlier this month, the target got on the New York subway. I knew what station they entered the subway at and at what specific time. They then entered another station a few hours later. If I had kept monitoring this person, I would have figured out the subway station they often start a journey at, which is near where they live. I would also know what specific time this person may go to the subway each day. During all this monitoring, I wasn't anywhere near the rider. I didn't even need to see them with my own eyes. Instead, I was sitting inside an apartment, following their movements through a feature on the Metropolitan Transportation Authority's website, which runs the New York City subway system. With their consent, I had entered the rider's credit card information, data that is often easy to buy from criminal marketplaces, or which might be trivial for an abusive partner to obtain, and punched that into the MTA site for Omni, the subway's contactless payments system. After a few seconds, the site churned out the rider's travel history for the past 7 days. No other verification required. Yeah, I checked this out, and it's true. If you go to omni.info, O-M-N-Y.info, there is an option. There's two options, actually. If you have an Omni card, it expects you to enter the Omni card number plus a security code, expiration date, and all that. But if you don't have an Omni card, if you instead use your credit card to get into the system, all you need is your card number, expiration date. That's it. That's all you need. Now, you might say, okay, well, who's going to get a credit card number? Who's going to have the expiration? Well, okay, you know what? There are many instances where you are able to get somebody's credit card number, 16 digits, and expiration date. It's not that hard. You look in somebody's wallet if they're in the same location as you. You know, if you live with somebody, it's easy to get that. Or if they buy something from your store, let's say that somebody is a merchant, and you give them, or you know, a waiter. Okay, how about this? A waiter that you stiff on tips, and that waiter is now upset at you. I'm not picking on waiters. I'm just the first example that came to mind. And now that waiter has your credit card number, has your expiration date, and can track you. and figure out where it is you're going and when you're on the subway and when you're on a bus. Okay, you know, that might not seem like much, but it's tracking. It really is tracking. And it's very accurate tracking as well. Now, in New York City, fortunately, you don't have to scan your card when you're getting off a bus or when you're getting off a train. So where you're going is still something that's fairly private. But this system... This is a bad system. This is not how you want to have ride history be stored, just with a credit card number. You need to have an account with a password that only you know. You know, at least have that option and encourage the use of that option. What do you guys think?
Yeah, the fact that there is zero security on this, like you don't even have the opportunity or the ability to, say, log into the MTA website and set yourself up a four-digit PIN at the very least, or a password a more sane level, is mind-blowing. It's mind-blowing that this is so wide open for anybody to abuse. There was just this week, without going into details, I had a doctor bill that needed paying, and I'm covered under Gila's employer as her spouse. And Gila, of course, this is not a malicious act at all, but Gila, you were able to use things you easily knew about me to get into the system at this medical establishment and pull up my bill without me.
Right. I mean, I did happen to have another bill that had your account number on it. But
right.
Yes, I just needed your account number and your birth date.
And
but,
fortunately, we're on very good terms. But if you were, say, an abusive partner. But
well, if I were an abusive partner, I probably wouldn't, you know, be helping pay your medical bills.
That's true.
No, I mean, they're not even asking for the, oh, my God, the super secret code. The super secret four-digit code.
Right, on your credit card.
On your credit card. Three-digit code.
It depends if it's Amex or if it's, mm-hmm. yeah, but, yeah, that's a good good point. That is not being asked for, just the expiration date and the card number.
Like, I have a prepaid Amex gift card that I got for Christmas last year. And if I want to check the balance on that thing, I have to put in all 15 digits plus the expiration date plus the super secret four-digit code, which on an Amex is on the front, so it's not super secret. But you need that extra piece of information to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
A zip code. Anything. This, I didn't know about this until today because I have an Omni card, but this is terrifying.
Well, a zip code is really easy because, you know, it's where you live. And if somebody has information on you, they probably know where you live or what your zip code is.
But also the fact that this is connected to transit, I mean, that's where you are in the physical real world, and that is a massive security hole. Information about where you are on the planet is privileged and should be behind at least some kind of security.
Now, I don't know if you guys have Omni cards. We're talking about credit cards here, but Omni card is the dedicated card that you can get now, They have a way you can look at your ride history or someone else's ride history online with that. You need the card number, you need the expiration date, and you need a security code. The security code is three digits. Okay, doesn't take very long to figure out what the security code is. But, you know, the security code also, it's printed on the card. So, you know, it's really not that hard to get a glimpse of that. If you're looking at somebody, hey, I want to see what the Omni card looks like. Can I see that for a second? All of a sudden, maybe I have a photographic memory. I memorized the whole thing, and now I'm tracking you for as long as you have that card.
Oh, so that's another good reason not to be friendly. Don't just participate in people's antics.
That's true.
They hustle you like that. Yeah. Oh, yeah, this would be fun. No.
Don't talk to people. Don't show them anything. Just go about your business.
Stu.
Gila, go ahead.
It's a long number. I just pulled out my Omni card, just for argument's sake.
What does the number begin with?
Two.
Okay. You shouldn't have answered that, by the way, because now I just have a certain number of numbers left to get from you.
And do you know how many digits?
I got the two.
Do you know how many digits are in an Omni card number?
How many digits?
A lot.
How many?
Hang on. I'm counting.
Okay.
This is exciting.
18.
Now, you see, you gave me that information, too. Now I know how many digits there are. You've given me two valuable bits of information here. 18 digits, two more than a credit card. And it begins with two. And maybe they don't all begin with two. I don't know, but I'm learning. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, in the work that I do, I learned things about credit cards that they all start with the same digit.
Well, no, they don't all start with the same digit. Visa is 4, MasterCard is 5, Amex is 3, Discover is 6.
Discover is 6.
But nobody has those.
Yeah, so Omni starts with 2. And, yeah, I mean, I live in my trip history because I want to see how close I am to the ride threshold. So I'm checking it constantly.
Okay, wait. Explain the ride threshold for people.
Absolutely. So there's a system. If you swipe, if you use the same payment card 12 times from a Monday to a Sunday, everything above the 12th ride is free. So that can be super helpful, and there are weeks I've gotten over it, and there are weeks I've gotten to 11 and been very disappointed. So, yeah, I check my ride history on a fairly regular basis so that I have an idea of how close I am to the cap.
Couldn't you just – I mean, okay, two questions. You want to get to that ride threshold, and you get on the subway, and then you get onto a bus. The bus is a transfer. Does that count as a second ride, or is that part of the first ride? I imagine it's
part of the first ride.
Okay, so
yeah, it's like a transfer.
I'd be bummed out getting a free transfer because I want to get the ride threshold up. So maybe I just go all around town entering different subway stations and bring that up in one day to that magic number, and then I know that this card is, I can go anywhere, you know, for the next week or so.
Yeah.
For free.
Or you could be Subway Robin Hood, and every time you leave a station, swipe somebody else in.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we've done that.
Gil, did you load this? Does it have a capacity to add value? What's
yes.
the interface like?
So it's via the website.
Okay.
And I use transit benefits for my employer, and I have it set to auto-refill every month with my pre-tax dollars.
Okay, so you can add a credit card too, though, right?
Yeah.
I'm really curious.
Well, the credit card is how you pay for the Omni card, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. In your online account, that is.
All right, I'll let her finish, but I had a point to make. I was
okay.
curious about
it. Gila, you finish. Kyle has a point, and I believe Alex is up next.
Oh, so all I was going to say, and I think this is probably a weird safety thing, but the way that I get my transit benefits is through a pre-funded credit card that I can only use for transit benefits. So even if someone breaks into my Omni account and gets my credit card information, they can't do anything with it because it will only refill for transit. That's all I was going to say.
I'm curious about how many people might actually get an Omni card, set up an account, and then top it up, so to speak, for the first time. Because it seems to me the MTA would be, like, incentivized to do that. Because when people are using the app or something that's a card, it's like a transactional thing. Whereas you have, I don't know, however many people might be interested in doing this. I'm sure they have it down to a percentage of ridership. But wouldn't that be like an instant, depending on how much people load up, but if everybody put $50 in and you extend that out over the population that uses the system, wouldn't that be something that would incentivize MTA to encourage people to set this up? Because it would instantly create some kind of revenue to at least pay for a decent website to handle it all.
Well, right now, it costs $5 to get an Omni card.
Just to get the card.
Just to get the card.
And then you associate it with your site, right?
And, well, then you add money to it for actual rides. And then you can set it up to auto-refresh or auto-update, you know, if you get below, say, $20.
But you don't have to do... Oh, okay, okay.
It can put more, or you can even set it up on a particular day of the month. That's when you replenish.
Is that what you do, Gila? You set it at a certain interval, like add $10 if below certain...
I have it to refill functionally the amount of a monthly pass on the 20th of every month is what I set it for. But I think you can also reload an Omni card with cash in a store, like where you bought an Omni card, if you don't want to set up an online account. There are ways around it, but they've made it pretty cumbersome.
Yeah. Alex, go ahead.
That's good. It's still an option.
I think fundamentally this, in going back to the main point here about whether or not this is a good idea, a bad idea, or just something that's very poorly implemented, I think this is just a very bad idea when it comes to identity and access management. This is something that's fundamental to cybersecurity and to system design and to security engineering. And the idea of tying someone's identity to something as simple as a 16-digit credit card number together with an expiration date that any merchant is going to have is just a very, very bad way of challenging to prove somebody's identity. And I don't think we're ever going to get around that unless the system changes its design. I also see the potential for abuse for this stemming not just from people who may be stalkers or abusive spouses or something like that, but also from law enforcement as well. It's going to be incredibly easy for law enforcement now to begin to track people, especially if they know what their financial details are with respect to credit cards, and it's easy for law enforcement to get that information, as well as private investigators. I'm sure maybe they have already been using this type of information to track their targets, and that makes all of us, I think, more vulnerable to have a system like this out in the wild. The other thing about this is I think a lot of people, when they ride the subway these days, they're not using Omni cards, they're not using Metro cards, they're just using their credit cards or they're using Apple Pay.
Right.
And as I understand it, you put your phone up next to the MTA transit turnstile, and that information is then going to be publicly, well, not publicly accessible, but accessible by way of just knowing what the credit card number was that was used.
I think this is a really important article that isn't getting enough attention in the mainstream media, and I certainly hope that our attention to this increases the extent to which people begin paying attention to this, because I think it's a very, very bad system design, and I'd hate to see it replicated in other major cities across the United States.
And the really disturbing thing, occasionally we hear of a whole trove of credit card numbers that was compromised, and there's a list of thousands of numbers, and the threat of stealing someone's identity is very real. But imagine you have thousands of credit card numbers, and you know that they are in the New York area, and you're able to track all those people based on that information. And you can really find out a whole lot more about somebody by tracking their movements than by simply having their credit card number. So I'm worried that the next time a whole bunch of these credit card numbers is compromised, that maybe somebody will be saving those numbers and watching and seeing what people do, and then making their next nefarious move after they learn a whole lot about somebody and their habits. It's very dangerous. I think, you know, the simple solution here, add a damn password at least, make the account number different from the credit card number, and give the users the power to implement as much security as they're comfortable with. Okay, we are almost out of time, so there's one more story I wanted to get to. This has to do with drones. And, Kyle, I know you're very interested in this. The FAA has released a document outlining compliance measures with something known as Remote ID, otherwise known as Part 89. It's going to require all drones be equipped with new Remote ID recognition and tracking technology in order to further integrate UAVs into the national airspace system. Beginning on September 16th, all pilots who are required to register their UAS must follow the new rule, which requires drones to either have a native remote ID or be fitted with a remote ID broadcast module like a portable transmitter. If the drone has a broadcast module, the FAA website says that the drone must be operated within visual line of sight. If your drone is not remote ID compliant or equipped with a remote ID broadcast module, you may only fly in designated FAA-recognized identification areas, known as FRIA, sponsored by community-based organizations, CBOs, where they love their acronyms, or educational institutions, such as AMA Flying Fields.
American Modelers Association, okay. I gather?
Yes, of course.
I don't even know, but I'm guessing.
I know you've flown drones a couple of times, Kyle.
Do you think of this? I've built model airplanes and all kinds of things, and there was a purchase made regarding a drone around headquarters, basically, and, we flew it, and then we hit the wrong button, and it crash-landed. And, anyway, that was fine. It is legal, in other words. It's, like, registered mm-hmm. and so forth. But it's been sitting. Basically, the batteries all stopped charging. It's been plagued with problems. And now I think the company that makes it just makes, like, stuff for defense or something. They're just busy selling AI or whatever in their drones. So, like, there's no support, and the best help I've found is, like, how to hack this particular type of drone. And no doubt, like, hackers talking about that model years ago are actually giving me more insight into, like, exactly what it is and how to fix it.
Tell folks the model. We can shame
them. No, I'm embarrassed. Well, I'm embarrassed.
No, they should be embarrassed.
I'm embarrassed.
They make a drone, and then they don't support it.
That's not the point. That's not the point of
this. No, it's not the point.
Save for overtime.
Okay.
Where I'm going, though, with the remote ID thing is, if you fall into this category, in other words, you don't have a brand spanking new drone that basically integrates this into the setup, you have to, at some expense, buy tags and extra stuff to be compliant so that you can be tracked, like literally tracked, where you are, where your drone is, how fast it's going, all of that. So, if you've been grounded, so to speak, and you wake up September 17th, I think it is, you have to be able to comply with this, or else go to your little RC hobby field and hope you don't get in trouble or whatever, or make those people mad, or be at an event or a special use scenario or inside a butterfly net. I don't know. Point is, it's a lot of extra steps, and I'm not a drone person per se. This is a whole industry. It's a sports thing. There's leagues. There's jobs, industrial uses. This is a field that is really, and I'm not even going to make the puns, it's become prevalent. And so we're curious. If you have any insights or information about how you feel about compliance and what the take is from drone people, we would love to know. OTH@2600.com. Because obviously the tracking part we have strong feelings about. I'm not totally clear on the protocols, but I believe there's some Bluetooth involved and the ability to use that at a great distance. So to me, that says that there's some kind of network that they've established, or they're using existing transmission sites like cell towers or something to monitor those frequencies for these IDs when they're implemented. And for people that are working and doing this, of course, they'll do what they have to do to continue doing their business. For hobbyists, it's like, okay, you want to fly a second time, you got to spend, I think the only place I could find that's making this is in Czech Republic, or CZ.CZ.
Yeah.
Yeah, this place called Drone Tag. They make like a little PCB. I'm curious also if there are domestic manufacturers that are making modules so that people can be in compliance, because this one's like, you know, over 100 or so, and, you know, hundreds of dollars. You don't want to go into all this if you're just a hobbyist. So how do people feel about this? I'm curious, because it's adding expense. Even if you're a local news reporter or something, you have to go through all of this and the wrangling of it. And then, of course, what happens when people clone these or come up with falsifications and so forth? There's just a lot of aspects to this I think we're going to be reporting on in the future.
We only have 45 seconds left. Anybody have any quick comments on this? We can continue on overtime. Go ahead, Rob.
2600 meetings are happening this Friday all over the world. 2600.com/meetings.
Okay, I meant comment on what Kyle just said, but okay. Alex, did you have something?
Yeah, I think Kyle's right to be concerned about this, because it just adds layers of complexity to, you know, what's I think a really interesting and innovative technological hobby, and I think that's really unfortunate. I think he's right to bring this up, and I look forward to addressing it in the future.
Okay, and we can again continue this conversation on Overtime, which starts at 8 p.m. on YouTube. You can get the link from the main 2600.com webpage, or just go to Channel 2600 on YouTube. Again, I'll be back next week with our special BAI Buddy Show, and please spread the word on that, or go to give2wbai.org and pledge your support to WBAI. We will see you next week, or at 8 o'clock on Overtime. Good night.
Hello, computer. Du hast schon was im Kasten. Hallo, Computer. Ich greife in die Tasten. Ich spiele, zeichne, schreibe mit dir. Doch du weißt aber nichts von mir. Ich klick herunterfahren an.
Und was dann?
Aufstehen, rausgehen. Ciao, Computer, ciao. Aufstehen, rausgehen. Denn ich weiß genau. Draußen warten Hund und Katz und Freunde auf dem Fußballplatz. Das weiß ich genau. Ciao, Computer, ciao. Hallo, Computer, du hast schon was im Kasten. Hallo, Computer, ich greife in die Tasten. Ich spiele, zeichne, schreibe mit dir. Doch du weißt aber nichts von mir. Ich klick herunterfahren an. Aufstehen, rausgehen. Ciao, Computer, ciao. Aufstehen, rausgehen. Denn ich weiß genau. Draußen wird's zum Spielen Tag. Auch wenn stürmt und wenn es schneit.
rein. Das weiß ich genau. Ciao, Computer, ciao. Hallo, Computer, du hast schon was im Kasten. Hallo, Computer, ich greife in die Tasten. Ich spiele, zeichne, schreibe mit dir, doch du weißt aber nichts von mir. Ich klick herunterfahren an. Aufstehen, rausgehen, ciao Computer, ciao. Aufstehen, rausgehen, denn ich weiß genau, bald schon mach ich irgendwann den Computer wieder an. Das weiß ich genau. Ciao Computer, ciao.
Hallo Computer.
Ciao.
This is Ralph Pointer. Join me and others every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time on WBAI 99.5 on your radio dial. It would appear the human movement is such that at any moment in history, there are too few that understand possibilities of existence that would benefit all who inhabit this planet and are willing to act on this understanding. This program will feature that few. What are your views on these issues that impact your life today? What are your views on America today? What are your views on America's future? Can we talk? Call in 212-209-2877. Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 on your radio dial.